Good morning. This is KVNF Regional News. I'm Patricia Naft. It's Wednesday, January 29th. Garfield County authorities have released the names of the three people who died in a plane crash Monday morning near Silt. Doug Sheffer, Larry Schaefer, and Christopher Gaskill were reportedly killed after the helicopter hit a power line. The three were surveying power lines as part of a project that uses infrared technology to find potential bad spots in the lines. Reports say Larry Schaefer was an employee of the company behind that project, Holy Cross Energy. Doug Sheffer, meanwhile, was a storied pilot based in Rifle with a long history of performing backcountry rescue missions. Details on Gaskill, the third victim, weren't available as of last night. The Grand Junction Daily Sentinel is reporting that the Payment in Lieu of Taxes program, otherwise known as PILT, will be included in the National Farm Bill. U.S. Senator Michael Bennett's office said the program would be funded at the same level it was last year. According to the Daily Sentinel, counties across the state received a total of $32 million in funding from the program, which gives federal money to counties that are largely made up of untaxable public lands. Mesa County received just over $3 million from the program last year, while Hinsdale County received over $131,000. Senators Mark Udall and Michael Bennett are co-sponsors of a bill that would permanently fund the program. Work to stabilize boulders after rock slides along Red Mountain Pass continued yesterday. Crews have been installing large panels of wire cable netting along the cliffside to stop the rock falls, and the Colorado Department of Transportation says that part of the job is just about finished. Crews saw some snow yesterday at the site of the rock slides, about 2 miles south of Ouray, and there's a storm system moving in today that could delay the work temporarily. CDOT says the pass will likely remain closed through the rest of the week. Some areas of western Colorado have high rates of avalanche risks, and this winter there's a new avalanche forecaster to help bring those risks down. Blaze Reardon is with the Colorado Avalanche Information Center and gave a talk last night in Aspen, coordinated by the group Power for the People.
One of the key ways to avoid snow slides is to use the latest information about conditions in the backcountry. That information is gathered on a statewide website by the Colorado Avalanche Information Center. The site has been upgraded this winter season. Blaze Reardon is the center's new forecaster for the Aspen area.
So part of the reason for using these icons is that you'll get a sense of what kind of dragon we're dealing with. Is it a little salamander that, you know, ankle biter, a friend of mine called him the other day, that you can manage with certain kind of strategies?
Or is it a day with the potential for large, powerful avalanches? The website's new upgrade is designed for quickly seeing an overview of how dangerous snow conditions are, but with enough technical information for the people who want as much detail as possible. Aside from promoting the site's new look, Reardon wants to talk about the big picture. He warns that people often don't know when they've made good choices to avoid avalanches or merely just gotten lucky.
We become overconfident in our skills and our knowledge in the backcountry.
Instead, Reardon has tips to figure out the best way to make good choices. One is debriefing with backcountry partners to see if skiers made turns in the right places. Reardon recounts an experience he had with a mentor. While out skiing on a high avalanche danger day, Reardon decided to get a few extra turns in a place that was more treacherous.
And as I did, I saw him look at me, and he just gave me a look that said, "Wow, that's dumb." All right? And that's all it took. You know, that lesson has sunk in for decades.
So sometimes honest feedback about mistakes is essential, too. The website provides a range of weather and avalanche condition forecasts. Knowing conditions in the area backcountry skiers plan to visit is a crucial part of the most basic decision, whether or not to go to a certain terrain in the first place. The website is avalanche.state.co.us. Elise Thatcher, Aspen Public Radio News.
The number of community gardens in the U.S. has been growing in recent years as more people take an interest in producing at least some of their own food. Yet in some Western communities, a new and radical approach to communal agriculture is taking root, the edible forest garden. In the current issue of High Country News, Kevin Taylor describes these new edible forests that are cropping up on public lands across the West. For the latest edition of Sounds of the High Country from KDNK, Nelson Harvey spoke with Taylor and checked in with the backers of an edible forest garden in the Roaring Fork Valley.
I'm gonna be around my vegetables. I'm gonna chow down my vegetables.
Public parks are good for lots of things. Taking walks, playing frisbee, watching people, or stealing a minute for quiet contemplation. But what if you could head down to your local park and harvest a snack? In the current issue of High Country News, the writer Kevin Taylor profiles several Western communities that are trying to make that dream possible by installing edible food forests, crops of edible plants in public spaces that are open for noshing to anyone who's passing by. Taylor says the growing popularity of edible food forests is an offshoot of the local food movement and the desire of some communities to reduce their dependence on an energy-intensive industrial food system. Yet the forests are also based on the idea that public parks should be more ecologically efficient and self-sufficient than they are now.
A lot of, you know, green space public parks tend to be just vast areas of lawn, you know, for the convenience of maintenance using a mower, whereas the people who are pushing for permaculture, a food forest, the idea is that it will use less water, need less maintenance, you know, as it matures.
Food forests are conceived using principles of permaculture, an approach to ecological design that's based on mimicking natural forest ecosystems and designing gardens that at least to some degree regulate and maintain themselves.
There's an overstory of taller trees, say fruit trees, nut trees, and an understory of woody shrubs and vines, and then a lower story of ground covers. And all of these have functions, and people have spent a lot of time observing natural forests and how plants work with each other. So they try to design a system where the benefits, you know, i.e. food, fruit and nuts, berries, herbs, will be most available, and things that people don't want, such as, you know, weeds and non-food producing plants, will be suppressed.
In his story, Taylor profiles food forests on public land in the Washington cities of Seattle and Tacoma, along with one in Helena, Montana, and another in Basalt, Colorado. Backers of the Basalt Food Forest are getting ready to break ground on their project this spring by digging up and planting Ponderosa Park near downtown.
So we'll have your traditional fruit trees, plums, apples, pears, things like that.
Stephanie Sison is Basalt's urban agriculture consultant.
As well as some of your understory edibles like raspberries and currants and gooseberries and things like that. Grapes, hops, vines, all kinds of different layers, as well as culinary and medicinal herbs.
Sison says that while Basalt already has two thriving community gardens, the fruit and nut trees and other perennial plantings planned for the food forest make it a longer-term and more communal project than the standard community garden is.
And so the town essentially owns it. The town, it's their park, and they're putting in the trees, and everyone gets to enjoy it. Hopefully take part in taking care of the trees, take part in learning about the trees and how to grow them and prune them and harvest them, specifically in this area because we do have such a big animal threat with bears and things.
That animal threat so far has been the largest stumbling block that backers of the Basalt Food Forest have faced. And to placate wildlife officials, one of their first moves this spring will be to install a sturdy fence to keep bears, deer, and other wildlife from snacking on the forest's bounty. Another challenge that boosters of food forests across the West are facing is the difficulty of getting a diverse cross-section of their communities to participate in the planning and planting process. At the food forest now under construction in the Beacon Hill neighborhood of Seattle, the garden's founders spent a year papering the neighborhood with flyers and talking to neighborhood organizations to recruit a diverse group of volunteers. Yet when the time finally came to actually break ground on the food forest, all but about one or two of the 100-odd volunteers who showed up to wield shovels and wheelbarrows were white.
There were a couple of reasons for that. One is economic. Caucasians around Seattle tend to have more money, better jobs, more free time. They can afford to volunteer. Maybe people coming from different immigrant communities, you know, there are Latinos in the Beacon Hill neighborhood and Asians who've come here from elsewhere. For them, getting to America is kind of like, you know, if you were a farmer or involved in agriculture in your past, that was something that you left behind, because that's not why you came to America. You came to America for university or for a white-collar job.
The Edible Food Forest in Basalt sits immediately adjacent to the Roaring Fork Mobile Home Park, a neighborhood that's home to Latino immigrants from Mexico and points south. But whether the Basalt gardeners can draw on the town's diversity to help construct their food forest remains to be seen. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, I'm Nelson Harvey. Your favorite vegetable.
You can find past episodes of Sounds of the High Country at kdnk.org, and the current issue of High Country News is at hcn.org. Stay tuned for the Wednesday morning music mix with Jeff Reynolds. For KVNF News, I'm Patricia Naft.